A couple of years ago, sitting at my computer, going through the inbox of my email, and there's an invitation in my email, but it wasn't to a conference or to a workshop. It was to something that was labeled as a residential event for a new model of science communication, for an opportunity to tell the greatest science narratives that have ever been told. Yeah, right, whatever. So as my hand is going to the delete key to get rid of that email, I notice who the sender was. The sender was LUMCOM. That's the Louisiana University's Marine Consortium. And they were pulling together scientists and science communicators from across the globe for this residential event. We didn't have to submit abstracts. There weren't going to be posters. Just come on down and have this opportunity with us. So instead of hitting the delete key, I hit the reply key because now I'm fascinated by this. So I said, sign me up. Now it's March of 2018. I'm in a shuttle from the airport, driving on this road in Cocodrie, Louisiana, to get to LUMCOM. And by the way, LUMCOM is on reportedly the most haunted road in all of Louisiana. And I'm driving to a residential event that I have no idea what it is. So immediately when we get to the facility, we're ushered into the auditorium, and the director of LUMCOM, Dr. Craig McLean, welcomes us all into the room, and he says, I have a mission for all of you. And here's the theme for the next 4 days. And on the screen behind him, two words flash up. Coastal optimism. All of us in the room are like, huh, okay. But there was a lot of meaning between these two words. Dr. McLean continued to explain that the stories that we see in the news and in the media about Louisiana focus on the doom and gloom, focus on sea level rise, loss of vegetation, submergence of the coast, and so on and so forth. What he really wanted and what the residents of southern Louisiana really wanted were the stories that talked about hope, that talked about optimism, that talked about adaptation and resilience, that spoke about coastal optimism. So immediately, we start going in the field. We're on the water. We're going to these sites of coastal restoration. We're driving through these communities and meeting local political leaders. We're meeting the people at the local stores. And we're hearing all of their stories. And our challenge is to find a way to tell their stories in new models that haven't been used before. So as we're going around and my colleagues are starting to come together and they're creating podcasts and they're creating blog posts and I'm trying to figure out what is my way to tell their stories. I could use some of those tools as well, but it just wasn't clicking with me, not with this theme and not in this environment. So at the end of this residential event, everyone gets up on a stage and they present their products that they finished creating. Amazing interviews of the women on the bayou and what they're doing. These incredible data-rich graphics that are interactive, that have ways you can learn about the changes in the ecosystem. And I'm kind of sitting there, because I've got nothing. Feeling really disappointed in myself, I get back in the shuttle, get on that haunted road, get to the New Orleans airport, board my plane for my flight back to Philadelphia. I fasten the seatbelt, sitting there feeling really, really sad. Like I've not only disappointed myself, but I've disappointed Dr. McLean and the whole idea of coastal optimism. And then the pilot gets on and he says, due to a weather delay in Philadelphia, we're going to be sitting here on this plane for an undetermined amount of time. Like, that makes me feel better. So the woman that was sitting in the seat next to me immediately starts the small talk, right? That chatter that you do when you're all in that situation. And she says, so what's your name and what do you do and why were you here? And she shares that she's from southern Louisiana, from the coast. And I tell her that I'm a scientist and I was down here for this LUMCOM event on coastal optimism. And immediately her eyes get big and she gets really excited and she says, Christmas trees! She said, Christmas trees are great. I'm like, okay. Because it's March. And I have no idea the connection between Christmas trees and southern Louisiana. So immediately, finally, get back to Philadelphia, get on my computer, and I start Googling, and I find out that in the southern parishes along the coast, and in Louisiana, they call their counties parishes, that after the holidays, the local residents get together. So it's the local people, it's their government officials, and it's the Louisiana National Guard. They come together and they collect the discarded Christmas trees, and then they place them offshore in these pens that they actually call cribs. They're parallel to the shore, but they're offshore enough where they'll reduce wave energy from storms, they'll trap sediments, and what they're finding is they have actually measured that all these discarded Christmas trees are actually helping reduce the rate of shoreline erosion. So yay, Christmas trees! So I had my story. I knew I wanted to do something with this, and I knew I wanted to be creative with the way that I told the story too. So I was thinking about how could I be creative? Am I actually a creative person? What is something I could do? What's gonna be my tool? And I was like, you know, let me push myself. Dr. McLean was pushing us all. He went out on a limb inviting us all down to LumCom. Let me put myself out on a limb and I'm gonna create a quilt. Now, I have very little experience quilting and have not made a lot of quilts. And my journey into quilting is actually an interesting one too, and it goes back to my grandmother. So when I was growing up, my family, we lived an hour away from my grandparents, and every Saturday we would pile into the car, we would drive to my grandparents' house, and we'd be there all day. We used to vacation with them in the summer too. We'd always go to Old Orchard Beach, Maine. They really liked the coast, and so we'd be there. And my grandmother and I were so close. She was an amazing woman that raised 8 kids. She had the biggest smile, the greatest laugh, and she played a mean card game of Uno. When I went away to college, we didn't have a lot in common. So when I would call and talk to her, we would talk about things like her favorite TV shows, American Idol and Law and Order. And then we also shared a love of crocheting. So we had that creative part in common. When she passed away, my extended family knew that we shared this love of crocheting. And so I actually inherited her sewing machine. So keep in mind, I've never actually saw my grandmother sew. But this was not her original sewing machine. She got this one later in life. And it wasn't one of those fancy ones by Singer or by Brother. No, this was a Kenmore. It was purchased at Sears. So it was a very basic model, but I felt this enormous pressure on me. Because now I've got my grandmother's sewing machine. I got to do something with it. So I immediately went to the local Joann Fabric store, signed up for a quilting class, and in a couple months, I had my very first quilt. Feeling quite proud of myself because the last time I had sewed was in the 7th grade in the home economics class where you had to make this pillow in the shape of an animal. Yeah, mine was a bunny rabbit. So I had the story I knew I wanted to tell. I had the method. I wanted to do it by making a quilt. And so I set out. I started looking through my quilting magazines to figure out, okay, what pattern am I going to use? No, I wasn't happy with any of them. So, okay, I'm going to make my own pattern. I know what fabrics I'm going to need. And I decided, well, we've got to go all out on this. And I live not that far away from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is the home of Amish quilting community and amazing fabric outlets. So I figured might as well take the opportunity, headed out to Lancaster, and went from store to store and had a carriage that was just filled with bolts of fabrics going up and down and trying to figure out which ones I was going to choose. I was very lucky I had someone there to help me, to consult, to figure out which were the best fabrics. That was my husband, and he has nicknamed himself the Quilt Whisperer because of all the advice he gives me. But I finally have my fabrics, and I start making the quilt, and I'm cutting fabrics, and I'm sewing them, and then I'm realizing I totally forgot to allow for the seam allowance when you sew fabrics together. Again, my very basic sewing skills. So I had to start over, and I finally get the quilt done, and I have now not just my Christmas tree story quilt, but I have 5 quilts that I now have in a collection that I call Stitching Hope for the Coast. I am hoping very soon to get these quilts back down to Louisiana so that the residents can see them there, that they can go on display at LumCom, and so that people can see this unique way of hopefully reaching new and different audiences to hear about coastal optimism. I often think back to Dr. McLean in that first night where he revealed that theme, and he challenged us to find new ways to tell stories, and I think I did that. I also think of the woman that was sitting next to me on the plane that gave me that inspiration. So thank you to the woman in seat 17B on American Airlines flight 1630 on March 20th, 2018. Thank you for your enthusiasm on coastal optimism. And I also think back to my grandmother, because we spent so much time on the coast on US 1 in Maine, driving up and down that road every single summer, visiting every lighthouse along the way. There's a lot of lighthouses on the Maine coast. But I think she'd get a real kick out of knowing that I'm still using her machine. Don't know for how much longer, because that bobbin keeps jamming on me, but I'm using her machine to sew these stories of coastal optimism. And I'm still watching Law and Order. Thank you.